Some people might say coffee doesn't need chocolate, but you're not some people. You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavors swirling together with cold brew, topped with velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles. That imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new caramel chocolate cold brew. It's a cold brew dream come true. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.
Inspiring interviews with today's top landlords.
This is the Rental Income Podcast.
And now, Dan Lane.
There's lots of ways to analyze a rental property, but the very first thing that I look at when I'm looking to buy a new rental is it needs to meet the 1% rule, meaning that if I'm going to buy a property for $100,000, I need it to rent for 1% of the purchase price. So in the case of a $100,000 house, I need it to rent for $1,000 a month. That's always worked out pretty well for me. But Matthew, you don't really care too much about the 1% rule. Why not?
Well, for the most part, Dan, the 1% rule doesn't even exist in our area. You can't find a deal that'll cash flow to 1%. So even the best deals I've found don't get there. But all the properties that I've got do cash flow pretty nicely. Maybe not the 1% rule, but they're all making good money.
On the podcast today, we're going to talk about Matthew's strategy. We're going to take a look at his numbers and figure out how exactly he's able to be so profitable when he doesn't meet the 1% rule. Joining us on the podcast today from Nashville is Matthew Crawford. Let's take a real quick break. We'll come right back and we'll talk to Matthew.
The first step in buying a rental property is to get pre-qualified, and I would suggest you work with a lender that specializes in working with investors, because the last thing you want to have happen is to get to closing and find out the money's not there and you can't close. The lender that I recommend is Chaley Ridge from Ridge Lending Group. She's a nationwide lender, and she'll pre-qualify you for free if you mention Rental Income Podcast. Find out more today. Contact Chaley at ridgelendinggroup.com. That's R-I-D-G-E, lendinggroup.com. NMLS 42056.
Matthew, before we talk about the 1% rule, I want to try to understand where you're coming from. Can you tell me a little bit about the rentals and the types of neighborhoods that you're investing in?
Sure. Yeah, the rentals that we have are all single-family rentals, and it's really, you know, there's a million different ways you can invest in real estate. And for us, what we really like are single family rentals. And it's, I guess it's because it's what we know.
Right.
And in the area that we're in, all these houses were built in the late 60s, early 70s. And they have a couple things about them. They have brick veneer and hardwood floors. So those are, for whatever reason, those are my first boxes I check. And, also, all the houses that were kind of built in that time frame were just built really well. And you know that they've got dry crawl spaces. The framing's done well. You're not, the bones of the building are fine.
Mm-hmm.
It's all great neighborhoods. And matter of fact, my primary residence is within 3 miles of all of my rentals. And it's a lake town, right outside of Nashville. You know, it's a growing town. It's got every amenity, parks, you know, you name it. Just a great town to live in, great schools, all that.
Okay, so it's a solid town. Sounds like you're buying solid properties that are in pretty good shape. So I want to talk to you about the 1% rule. So you mentioned that the 1% rule doesn't really exist in your area. Like, so you just can't find any deals that would meet the 1% rule?
None that I've been able to find.
Yeah.
You know, if you buy a $200,000 house there, you're not at least this point in time out in this town, you're not getting $2,000 a month rent. Nobody's paying that much for rent unless it's a fully furnished, you know, beautiful house on the lake or something along those lines.
Right. So maybe like if you were looking at a different area, maybe like a rougher area, or maybe an area that was further away from the city, could you maybe find a 1% rule deal around there?
You probably could if you found a place that, you know, needed a little bit more work, like a rehab, things like that. You could probably do it, but then, you know, all those things come with that. You've got more money to do the actual work. You've got probably higher rent or higher turnover for your tenants.
Sure.
So, you know, it's just, there's just more involved.
Yeah.
The houses that I've got, the last one I bought, I literally brought a bucket of tools to the house and spent 2 hours and got it rent ready. So
awesome. Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk through some of the reasons why the 1% rule doesn't matter to you. So like what else, like what are some of the reasons that you're comfortable overlooking that the 1% rule?
Well, I guess for me, the biggest thing is they all cash flow, every one of them. And it's not like it's cash flowing $100. Of the four single family houses that I have, they all cash flow over $500 a month.
Okay. So let's talk some numbers, like just to understand, like say for one of your properties, can you tell me what you paid for it and what the rent is?
Sure. I've got the first one we bought was $185,000.
Okay.
We put 20% down and it rents for $1,450.
Okay. So $185,000. So you're close to the 1% rule. Like, you know, just maybe that's like 0.8 or something.
You're not too far off there.
Okay. And so you bought that property, you put 20% down. What's your mortgage payment on the house?
It is $926.
$926. Okay. So you've got $500 there, so that if any issues come up, any repairs come up, you've got some extra money above the rent to pay for anything, and then also to account for some vacancy as you have turnover from time to time.
In a nutshell, Dan, I'm looking at these as a long term investment, so I'm not planning on flipping it in 2 years or something like that. We're going to keep them and pay them off as soon as I get the quantity of rentals that will replace my income. If they were paid off, we're going to start paying them off.
Okay. So how many rentals do you think you need?
7 to 10.
Okay.
Would kind of replace my income and make me feel comfortable, I guess.
Okay. And you're at 4 right now?
Yes.
So just a few more rentals and you got this. So what's your plan for paying them off once you have your 7 to 10? Are you going to start just whatever extra money you have, whatever extra cash flow you have, just start pounding away at those mortgages?
Yeah, and like I think I told you that we paid off our primary mortgage before we started any rentals. And the way we did that was we put every penny we had, whether it was $20 or $2,000 out of our personal budget, we put that on the mortgage every month, whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to do the same thing here with the rental houses.
Okay.
So we're going to pick one of them and attack it. So all the rental income, all of my residual income from my job, everything is going to go on it. And the way I look at it is the quicker I do that, the quicker my cash flow goes up.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. 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 Now, what about with financing? So with the interest rates being so low today, you can make a case that, maybe you're better off keeping a mortgage at 3%. Like what are the rates that you're getting when you're buying houses? Like you just bought something recently.
Well, yeah, three and a quarter.
3.25. So like you could make a case that keeping a mortgage at 3.25 makes a lot of sense. Like did you ever think about maybe keeping the mortgage just because the money is so cheap, or do you like the comfort of knowing you don't have a mortgage, or the security of knowing you don't have a mortgage?
Well, I agree with you. Yeah, that's some cheap money. That's about the cheapest money we've seen in a long time. But when I paid off my primary mortgage, there were a lot of people there. You know, you had kind of two schools of thought. Some people said, "Wow, great, good for you," and others said, "That is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. That's the cheapest money. You've missed your mortgage insurance write off on your taxes." But for me, for a couple things. First off, knowing that I own it and that it's mine is, a great feeling. And second, I don't have to pay the mortgage payment anymore.
Right.
So, some of these are $900 or whatever. My cash flow just went up $900.
Right. Right.
And my goal isn't to, I'm not going to compare the numbers to the nth degree and say, well, I could have bought Tesla stock and made more money. Or whatever.
Right.
My goal is to have them all paid off and my retirement job be unclogging toilets and repainting for the next tenant.
Right.
Yeah, that's not a bad strategy. And, you know, that's very safe. I mean, you can't get foreclosed on if you have a paid off house as long as you pay the taxes every year. So I think that's a good strategy. You know, I the other benefit to you in living in Tennessee has got to be the property taxes. Your property taxes are pretty low there, right?
They are, relatively speaking. Yes, they are. You know, yeah. I don't want to pay any, but
yeah, right.
It's cheaper than a lot of areas.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I think that's maybe another thing to consider with varying from the 1% rule is that, you know, if someone's in a higher tax state like Texas or New York or Massachusetts, a 1% rule, like you almost need to go above 1% in some of those areas where with the low property tax, and you guys also don't have a state income tax, right?
Right, we do not.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's all stuff that I think you got to take into account, that the 1% rule, I think, is a good rule of thumb, but it's not the end all be all that if something meets 1%, it's a great deal, you should buy it. And if it doesn't meet 1%, you should run away.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's like anything. It's a good rule of thumb and good to, you know, kind of measure by, but you know, there's so many different ways you can do what we're talking about, whether it's, you know, apartments, single family houses, condos, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
A million different ways and a million different strategies. And for me, as long as I'm cash flowing them and somebody else is paying off the asset, it's a good deal to me.
Right. So what kind of demand do you have? Like in your area, like when you have a vacancy, are you able to rent the properties pretty quickly?
Yeah, honestly, the last one that we bought, which was only a couple months ago, it was insane. I put it on Facebook Marketplace and it blew up. I mean, I probably got 200 requests, you know, and that's not an exaggerated number. People calling me, messaging me, can I see the property, you know, yada, yada. So they're flying like hotcakes. Of course, you have a lot of naysayers. I can't believe this house is going to rent for that much. But then you got a lot of people that are willing to shell the money out like now for it. So
you might be able to push the rent a little bit. Have you thought about maybe going a little bit higher?
Yeah, I thought, you know, honestly, where we put the rent on this most recent house, it was $1,600. I thought there's no way we'll get that. And that was with then immediately after, you know, 200 people trying to rent it from me. So, yeah, I probably should have pushed that one.
Yeah.
Up.
Yeah, you know,
next go around.
I feel like with the demand that you have and with the neighborhoods your properties are in, that you're not meeting the 1% rule today. But you may in a couple of years, like as rents appreciate over time, I feel like there's a really good chance that if we're sitting here talking in 3, 4, 5 years, you might be at the 1% rule.
Do you think so?
Yeah. 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 That's something else. I mean, I think in just about every area, rents are going to appreciate over time. So, you know, even if you have a thin deal when you're getting in there, it's hopefully going to get better. And, you know, the other thing I like about your strategy is so you're working with a realtor. It sounds like you're buying properties off the MLS, right?
Exactly.
So it's just basic stuff. I mean, this is like real estate 101 that you're doing. It's nothing crazy complicated. You're working with a realtor. The realtor is finding you properties and you're putting 20% down and you're making $500 a month on each property.
Yeah, exactly. And honestly, my wife is finding most of the properties and then sending it to the realtor saying, hey, what about this one? Can you give us the deets on it?
Oh, wow. Wow. Okay. Now, is it competitive? Because it sounds like it's a really competitive rental market. Is it competitive to buy properties too?
It is. We definitely celebrate when we get an offer accepted, and we've gotten a little bit creative with our offers. And that was from losing a couple. One of them we lost because they didn't include an appraisal contingency in the offer. And I thought, wow, that's crazy that was the difference in getting it or not getting it. So we tried that on our last, rental number 3, and they took ours, which was not the highest offer, but because we didn't put an appraisal contingency in there, they accepted our offer. Of course, that's it appraised awesome. For the correct amount. So it worked great.
That's good. So the only risk to that is if the house doesn't appraise, you might have to put in a little bit of money on top of your down payment. But, you know, right. as long as you're comfortable with that risk, I mean, that's a great way to get a property that you probably wouldn't have gotten if you didn't do that.
Yeah. And, you know, it's a good risk mitigation tool for the seller because they don't want to have to come out of pocket or reduce the price if it doesn't appraise yep. or something. So yep. it's great for them.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. Like there's so many little things in there. I've waived the financing contingencies in contracts before, which is risky because if you can't get financing, you still have to buy the house or you're going to lose your deposit. But, you know, yeah. I just figured, you know, I've got good credit. I know I'm going to get approved. That right. I was comfortable with putting my deposit on the line, and you know, luckily everything worked out.
Yep.
How about anything else? Like with the prices going up, are you using any escalation clauses or anything else in your offers?
Yeah, actually, on that same one, I think that the asking price of the house was $190, and we assumed it would go much higher than that, so we did a escalation. Up to $201,000, $1,000 escalation, and put in the offer at $190. I think it actually was listed at $189.9. Put in at $190, $1,000 escalation up to $201.
Yeah, that's another good tip for anyone looking to buy a house. Like, maybe could you explain how the escalation clause works for anyone that isn't familiar with that?
Sure, and you know you can pick your own numbers, but for this illustration, you make an offer. At like, for instance, $190, and the escalation clause is it'll go up $1,000 to beat any other offer up to a certain number. And that way, you know, you cover an entire spectrum without showing all your cards. Cause you know, you could say, you could offer $225,000, but that's dumb if the lowest offer was, right. $210. So right. you do the escalation and then you're only paying $1,000 more than the highest offer.
Right. Yeah. That's a great way to maybe not overbid on a property. And they have to show you the other contract, right? To show to you
yes,
that
exactly.
They're not taking advantage of you. Well, that is awesome. Well, Matthew, congratulations. I really love your strategy. I think you're buying properties right. And I love that you're working on getting everything paid off. I think that's really great.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, one of the things I like about it is when you have to save 20% to put down. You know, we're not doing hard money lending. We're not getting investors or anything like that. It's just us. So when we save $20,000 or 20%, however much that ends up being, it gives you time to think between mm-hmm. rentals. So you get a good opportunity to say, is this the right thing? Is this the right area? Is this the right property? So that's been a good kind of a gut check for us.
Before we wrap things up, I just want to point out that Matthew is having a lot of success with this strategy because he's got the perfect storm of things working in his favor. He's got really high quality properties in a really good neighborhood. He's able to attract really good tenants. He doesn't seem to have a lot of turnover. And when he does, he can rent the properties out very quickly. And his properties don't seem to have a lot of deferred maintenance, so the maintenance cost is very low. If you're looking at properties and you don't have all those things lining up, you're probably going to lose money if you follow the numbers that Matthew's using. If you have just an extra couple of weeks of vacancy or you have more maintenance or more evictions, you're probably going to lose money following Matthew's strategy. So make sure you really understand your local market and go with the numbers that are going to be profitable in the area that you're looking to invest in. If anyone wants to reach out to Matthew, I've got his contact information on the website. You can find it at rentalincomepodcast.com/episode280. I'd like to thank today's sponsor for making this episode possible. It's Chaley Ridge from Ridge Lending Group. If Matthew inspired you and you want to buy a rental property, whether you're just getting started or you want to add to your portfolio, the lender that I recommend is Chaley Ridge. She's a nationwide lender and she specializes in helping investors buy rental properties. She has a ton of different loan programs and she can find something that'll work for you in your situation. If you want to find out more or set up a time to talk to Chailey, just go to RidgeLendingGroup.com. That's R-I-D-G-E, LendingGroup.com. If you mention Rental Income Podcast, she will waive all the pre-qualification fees. NMLS 42056. Thank you so much for listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe. We have new interviews every single Tuesday. And if you subscribe, you'll get notified as soon as they come out. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast.
Some people might say coffee doesn't need chocolate, but you're not some people. You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavors swirling together with cold brew, topped with velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles. That imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new caramel chocolate cold brew. It's a cold brew dream come true. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.